Funding for The Front Row on Texas Tech Public Radio comes from the Helen Jones Foundation and from Citibank. Citibank's award-winning app delivers features that are redefining mobile banking, like the ability to turn your debit card off if it's ever lost or stolen, and the ability to raise ATM and spending limits. More information is at citibankonline.com. Citibank, member FDIC. Support also comes from Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. See the stars of tomorrow on the stage today. Today's edition of The Front Row comes in two parts. First, we'll be visiting with Dr. Dorothy Chansky, who is director of the Humanities Center at Texas Tech University. And then on the line, we're going to interview the lecturer who is participating in the events this coming week in the Humanities Center. So if I could, Dorothy Chansky, let me welcome you to the show. Thank you very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So for folks who haven't heard our interviews before and may not know, tell us just a little bit about the Humanities Center at Texas Tech. What is that?
The Humanities Center is an initiative that was started 3 years ago. We're actually just starting our fourth year of existence, by then Provost, now President, Dr. Lawrence Skouvenek. We are, you could say, a cheerleader, a promoter, a supporter, and a disseminator of all things humanities, which is to say, well, the usual suspects, people who do history, people who do English, people who do philosophy, people who do foreign languages and literatures, people who do anthropology. And when I say do, I mean both write and teach. But I think we could also say people who are interested in and followers of these areas of inquiry. And these areas of inquiry make up the humanities because individually and collectively, they explore what it is to be human. And what it is to be human is a whole bundle of experiences, questions, quests, knowledge, quests for knowledge, that touch on myriad facets of life that are actually familiar to almost all of us. I know there's a lot of talking these days about how the humanities perhaps are not practical, are nice, but they're extras, they're add-ons. What I find unfortunate about this is not that I don't think the humanities are important, I think the humanities are crucial, but whether I think that or not, we are surrounded by and soaking in the humanities. Every time anyone tells a story or says, well, draw me a picture to make me understand that, or anytime somebody says, I believe, what follows is precisely what we look at and assess in the humanities. So you could kind of say, we're all doing it all the time. The humanities just bring it forward in a, let's say, focused and maybe professional, deeper, intentionally thought-provoking way. But the idea that it isn't all of us is a false idea, because a day without the humanities would be a day without the news. It would be a day without visual expression. It would be a day without any kind of narrative or causality. It would be a day without decision making based on deeply held beliefs. It would be a day without ideas, and everybody's got ideas. We don't all think each other's ideas are equivalently good, but we've all got them. So we're all kind of walking advertisements for the humanities if we only knew it.
You have a whole series of events that the Humanities Center sponsors in order to further the mission of the Humanities Center. And one of these I love for this year is called Food And. Tell us how that came about.
This is our annual theme. Each year, the Humanities Center has a theme. And most of what we do in a given year centers on or furthers that theme. Food and of course it's hard to hear this in speaking, but when you see it in print, it's followed by dot, dot, dot. And what might go into that dot, dot, dot? Well, food and religion, food and taboo, food and sustainability, food and place, food and famine, food and agriculture, food and policy. You get the point. And we have had this year so far two speakers. This week we're about to host our third, who have filled in the blank in different ways. Our first speaker talked about food and place. What is it to have a food scene in a given city as a means of attracting people or branding the city? The second speaker talked about food and sustainability, particularly focusing on subsistence farmers in Latin America, although she also touched on other continents, and how sustainable practices mean not only a better life for the individual farmers, but actually a better life for the planet to the extent that it's not being stripped and depleted. This week's speaker, whom you'll be talking to on the phone, is talking about food and the military. And she can, I'm sure, talk about her topic better than I can. But I will just say that I read about her book before we invited her to speak. And then I read the book for which she is well known. This is her most recent book. And what really impressed me about it was how it spoke to, I would say, all of us to the extent that, well, I'm talking about the all of us in the United States who either eat food we got at the grocery store or fast food or food in restaurants, which I think is probably just about all of us, even if all you ever eat is stuff from, you know, the local convenience store. And we just take for granted we can get stuff that's going to have some shelf life, or we can get stuff that's going to be in packages, or if eight of us go out to dinner and we all want chicken, we can all have white meat. What happened to the rest of the bird? She makes it so clear in such an accessible way that the reason we have the food landscape we do is linked to, as she says in her title, the military. And whether you are pro-military, anti-military, indifferent to the military, our military spends a lot of money and really smart brain cells on the kind of research that affects all of us, because anything the military does has to work for big numbers of people. I'm originally from New England, and I remember, this was a while ago, a couple of decades ago, talking to a senator from Maine who dropped in the conversation in passing the fact that if the Army, which is only one branch of the military, served blueberry pie as dessert once a month, that had an enormous impact on the economy of Maine, which is one of the states that grows blueberries. Okay, innocuous. I love blueberry pie. Again, I'm from New England. That was ordinary for us. But that really made it clear that anything the military does, again, good, bad, indifferent, aggressive, not aggressive, you know, we got to feed our soldiers, has a big impact because it has to be a big action. And Anastasia Marx de Salcedo, who will be here this week, is talking about how military-funded research with an eye to feeding our soldiers and sailors and aviators and Marines affects all of us. And we may not have known that, but after reading her book, I know a lot more.
Right. For people who now are really interested, tell us all the details of her lecture.
Well, of course, I can't tell you the details because I haven't heard the lecture yet, right, but right. I can tell you that it will take place on Thursday, February 8th, starting at 5:30 in the South Crosland Room of the Texas Tech Library. South Crosland Room is, well, kind of a fancy way of just saying the lobby on the main floor on the east side of the building, which is the side closer to the Student Union building. It's actually a very nice area to have a talk. The talk, we've set aside an hour, but that should be 35 minutes or 40 minutes of her talk, and then 15 or 20 minutes of what we hope will be very lively Q&A. And if you have a copy of her book, I'll bet you she'll autograph
it
for you.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Right. Wonderful. That's coming up on the 8th at 5:30 p.m. in the Crossland Room, south area of the Crossland Room of the Texas Tech University Library. Dorothy Chansky, thank you very, very much. While you're here, if you would, are there more lectures to come this year on food and?
Yes, indeed. On March 2nd, we have a talk called Food and Tourism with Anthony Bourdain. What you see is never what you get. There's a provocative title. And on Thursday, March 29th, food writer and now, I guess, food judge and critic Ruth Reichel will be speaking at the Texas Tech Museum. Her talk will be at 7. The one on March 2nd with Roger Porter will be again at 5:30. So we are very excited about rounding out the year with a continuation of the multiple possible takes on the theme food and. Food and you, be there.
Wonderful. Sounds wonderful. Dorothy Chansky, Director of the Humanities Center, thank you very, very much for being with us. And we hope that all of you listening will stay with us as we're going to wrap up part one and launch right into part two. Joining us on the line, Anastasia Mox de Salcedo, who is giving a lecture here at Texas Tech University called Food and the Military, the Secret History of Processed Food. This is in conjunction with the Humanities Center, and we're very excited to have Anastasia on the line with us today prior to her visit to Texas Tech. Anastasia, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So this may be something that is not at the forefront of people's minds and may not have thought about. Food and the military. How did you get interested in how the military eats in all of its various functions?
Well, I don't know if I should share my story because it's part of my talk and how I get into it. But in the broader sense, I was a food writer for many years, and I slowly began to get interested in industrial foods, things like boxed mac and cheese, cereal, and I ended up writing a piece about the lunchtime staple, the sandwich. And in doing my research on that, I found a link to the military.
So you began to be, I guess, an expert in non-perishable foods.
So to speak, because what I began to look at were combat rations and or field rations, and these are different from the garrison food, which is hot and served in something like a cafeteria. These are the things you carry into the field with you, and so they have to be imperishable and safe and also pretty rugged because they're thrown into backpacks and dropped out of helicopters and so forth.
And I guess there's also cost involved as well, wanting to find something that can be used in the field relatively cheaply.
That is an excellent point. It's not what I would put first on the list of considerations, but it certainly is one in the long term. And there's one story that I will be telling in my talk about a food that the Army was looking for a cheaper substitute and ended up creating this whole category of foods that we Americans eat every day.
Foods that were developed for the military, how do you think they have influenced the general diet out in civilian life?
I think they have had a huge influence, and that is probably the most important takeaway from my book, which is that because the consumer food industry uses a lot of the food science that was developed by or for the military for combat rations, that food science is intended to create products that are very long-lived, that are shelf stable and intended to nourish for a, and this is the important thing, a very short period of time. But we consumers end up eating them day in and day out for, you know, years, decades, a lifetime. So there may be a very different impact.
Short term, fine. We don't know exactly what that might mean over the long term.
Exactly, because I think the, you know, the cost-benefit trade-off is perfectly acceptable if you're in the extreme situation of being in the field or in battle. But when you're just, you know, eating those things as part of your everyday life, then you want to consider the health impact.
Right. We should say that your book is titled Combat Ready Kitchen: How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. Tell us a little bit of background here. Does the military have a whole sort of eating industry with scientists and people who develop these products?
It does, and I was actually surprised, I should say hugely surprised, to learn it was 15 minutes from my house.
Oh, my gosh.
There is a an Army research center called the Natick Soldiers Systems Center. It has another name, the Natick Soldiers, Research Engineering and Development Center. And there they work on anything to support the individual soldier, including combat rations. It has a separate building for research and sort of development on the rations, and about 300 employees.
So, and they sort of make it possible for the military to operate both in terms of a garrison, but also in the field, in protracted war, perhaps.
They do, and actually their focus are the field rations. So, they do a little bit of work on, but the garrison rations are pretty much, you know, a regular hot meals prepared with normal American staples that you would find at the supermarket. It's the combat rations that are special because they have to last for such a long period of time.
Well, hopefully we have whetted people's appetite and given them at least a taste, if I can say that, for what your talk will be as you come to be part of this Humanity Center series of events. The theme for the entire year is food, and our special guest for this particular lecture is Anastasia Marx de Salcedo, who has joined us on the line here on the front row. Anastasia, thank you very, very much for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Today's edition of our program will be up on our website, kttz.org, later today. Rachel Boyd produces The Front Row. I'm Clint Barrick. Thanks for tuning in.